crackers, to the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me do my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ leave you flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs, ZIP 6. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Hello once again, everyone, and welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 33, coming to you February 17th, 2004. I am Stank Dog once again, and I am joined by one of our favorite guests of all time, the one, the only, well, the fifth, I guess I should say, Logan Five.
Gabba gabba hey.
Gabba gabba goo. Oh, and just for the record, my milkshake is better than yours. I just wanted to throw that out there.
What is it, a $5 milkshake?
Oh.
All right.
Yeah. We have a lot of stuff to talk about today, and it seems like I start every show with that, but I guess that's a good thing. And the way we're going to start it off is to jump straight into email. So, do our housekeeping here. First of all, I got another email from Regicide. First of all, correcting the pronunciation, I did kind of have it right. It's Regicide with a J. He was responding to our talk about TiVo last episode, and its ability to watch and track what your viewing habits are. I wanted to let you know that the TiVo is actually a Linux box, which I didn't know that. I don't have a Linux box, so I didn't know that. So I'm sure there may be a way, not legal, but a way anyway to stop them from seeing what you're doing. Don't have one, so I haven't looked into it. Anyway, I'm sure some help may come in a Google search, of course. Everything comes in a Google search. I use a DVR from the cable company, which pretty much does the same thing. Having to buy equipment and get spied on when you pay a monthly fee. Well, you don't know if your cable company's spying on you either, technically, unless you know the insides outs. But anyway, just thought you would enjoy some info. Thanks for the show later. Well, thank you again, Regicide, for the email. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm in the same boat with you. I don't have a TiVo box. He has a DVR, a digital video recorder, he mentioned, from the cable company. I don't know what brand or how those work. Do you have a TiVo or any other?
I don't have anything like that. My mom's got one of those DVR recorder things. I think a while back on Screensavers on Tech TV, they were talking about TiVo being a Linux box and right. Ways to hack it. Like, I think there's like an older version of the TiVos that you can do some Linux hacking with, but I'm not 100% sure on that. I remember something, though, on TV that I saw.
Interesting, and I wonder if it's TiVo brand. I wonder about the others. Isn't there a Replay TV? And I think Microsoft has a, I forgot what theirs is called. I think they had one time. And I know more than that, what I want to do, it's on my list of things to do with everything else, is just create a PC DVR, just a dedicated system that I can put in there and record just to some big hard drives and record and make my own, kind of roll your own TiVo, you know?
Yeah, there you go.
So that's really what I wanted to do, but I just haven't had time to get into that. Then obviously you have a lot more control in your recording a signal and not returning or sending any information out. You kind of would know that ahead of time. You could even, I guess, put on, well, I don't know that you could send data out. I guess it would depend if you bought some canned software. Obviously you don't know what they're sending and receiving, but if you were to completely roll your own, software included, then obviously you wouldn't be sending anything whatsoever, so it would be an input-only type situation, so you could feel a lot safer.
Definitely.
But okay, anyway, we have another email from X-Mafia, who says, thanks for mentioning my country's name. You guys are the best. Haven't missed an episode. I'll be making a new website soon. I will be sure your website link will be there. Keep up the good work. He's referring to Dual Parallel on the show last week. By all means, feel free to put up links to us. Feel free to mention us. I appreciate your letting me know that. I'm glad that you like the show and everything. But if anybody, and this is speaking generally, anybody that wants to link, you know, that's what the internet's all about. And hey, all the traffic we can get, we're happy for it. You know,
Finrev link box that they can use.
Made by none other than.
Who made that?
I don't remember. It was.
Whatever it is, it's really cool though.
Yeah, it was something five. I'm not sure. So yeah, actually, yeah, we encourage people to link to us as much as you want. Obviously, I hate having to say this. I don't think we have to say this, but don't put it anywhere where you're going to charge people, where you're going to, you know, try to act like this is your, you know, just link to it like a normal person. You know, be real about it. Don't try to embed or put windows within windows and frames and stuff like that. Just feel free to link to us whenever you want. We appreciate anybody that wants to come by and support us.
Ex-Machina, he was from Poland, if I recall, correct?
I believe that is the country he is referring to. We mentioned a few of them, but yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the one he was talking about, because that we get a lot of hits from Poland. We really do.
That's awesome.
As well as was a lot of other countries. I went through a list last time of what a lot of our hits. Get a lot of gov hits and a lot of mill hits still. That's a little interesting to see. But yeah, we get a very wide variety of hits. It's really, really interesting. Hacking is universal. I mean, it really is, you know?
It's great to know that people on the other side of the planet can hear us.
Yeah, and you know, there's...
The fact that they hear it, but the fact that they even know about us is just very cool.
Another thing that I have a lot of respect for is... See, I'm not a linguist. I'm not good with languages. I'm terrible about learning. I know a little bit of Spanish, enough to barely get by. These are people from other countries that, I guess, yeah, maybe some of them do speak English as well as their native language, or some countries English is their native language, but others, most of them are not. So, I mean, the fact that they can come and read English and, you know, basically get not only the content from their own native country and native languages and stuff like that, but also come over in English, I can't do the same thing. I can't go over to a German site or go over to a Polish or go over to... any other country sites, Dutch, whatever, and read their hacking sites and their hacking content. Translate it as best I can, but, you know, some of that stuff doesn't translate.
But there's a lot of good information there, too.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I'm sure there really is. And it's a lot more... Hacking's treated a lot differently in other countries. They have conventions over there that are much more... I won't say mainstream, but much more accepted, it would appear. Anyway, we had one other email, and this was actually, I think, we got after the holidays, but I wanted to talk about it when you were back on the show, because it was regarding you. And this was from Hitman, and he was sending this to you. It says, Logan 5, as the holidays approach, I wanted to take a moment to thank you. What the hell for, you might ask? Well, I wanted to thank you for winning me over to the Mac side. Yeah, good job, you brainwashed another one. It was a long process. My first computer was a Lisa, then a flashy 286. Woot! Then it was downhill from there into slippery depth of the Windows environment. At Linux World, I saw many a person toting around PowerBooks, and it got me thinking. After listening to Binrev Radio 10, I was sold and ordered a lovely 12-inch PowerBook. Everything that I did on Windows, I can do in OS X without freezing and constant rebooting. So, yeah, good job. You brainwashed another...
Welcome from the dark side, my friend.
We say that every time somebody converts from Windows to Linux as well.
That's right.
And one other thing, and more importantly, and this is... We say this all the time to you, too, but he says, thanks for all your work on BinRev Mag. It's still a lot more... It is a lot more stylish than that, quote, other hacker magazine. I will look forward to 1.3.
I want to thank you for taking the time to write.
Definitely.
And letting us know, I mean, number one, he let us know that he got something out of the show, which, no matter what the subject matter is, that's the important thing.
Absolutely.
And thank you for the props on the zine. we all worked very hard on it, and it, I think it definitely shows in the final. You know, from every level of the production, I think it's top notch. And
I absolutely, I know for a fact the graphics are top notch. I know the layout and design of it's top notch. There's no doubt of that.
Well, thank you. That's not what I mean. I more meant the content and everything.
Well, that's, you know, I do have to say, and not to toot my own horn or anything, but I think we have a good complement of skills. You know, that some of us are better. You know, I don't mind writing. I enjoy writing, actually. So the writing part of it doesn't really intimidate me or bother me so much. It's the graphic part of it and the layout and the imagination, frankly, of coming up with the ideas and stuff like that. So that's, you know, those are the skills that you have a lot. And not to mention, your writing is not too bad either. I just,
oh, thanks.
I kid you not, I reread your case modeling article again last night. I really honestly did. And it was, you know, besides the pictures and what you did, it was well written. It was a good, you know, it was absolutely good work.
Thanks. So, I had a blast doing it. And actually, that computer is still running. I haven't done anything with it since I wrote the article. But
yeah, I was getting ready to say, I still haven't gotten it yet. Is it caught lost in the mail somewhere? Or?
Oh, the computer?
Yeah.
Oh, I knew I forgot something.
That's what it was. Oh, man. Well, you know, and since we're on the topic of back, let's jump out of the housekeeping and jump into the show-and-tell part, because I know you had a new toy that you go into show-and-tell or speak and spell.
Oh, yes. I think we should quickly mention, though, that the next issue of BinRev is under production. It's actually going to be 2.1 since it's a new year.
Right.
I'm starting doing some of the layout work. I've got pretty much all the articles in that, so it is coming. But like Sank and I have talked about in the last time I was on, and we don't do this full time. There's all these real world things that keep getting in the way.
Yeah.
But we are working on it, and it's going to be out soon.
Okay. You want to give them any more soon? As in,
I would say within 3 or 4 weeks, I should have everything together.
3 or 4 weeks.
Or so any natural disasters or anything.
Well, you know, they happen, you know.
They do.
Sometimes life happens, man. It really does. And, you know, I'm kind of frustrated that I hadn't gotten my 2600 as of Saturday. Sunday, obviously, it's no mail. I haven't gotten my current issue of 2600. And now I know what people feel like with us, I guess. Because I'm like, where is it? I want to see it. I want to read it, you know. Everybody's telling me about what's in it and stuff.
We do this all the time.
Yeah, see, we this is not our living. I don't know if it's theirs. I assume that really it is, I guess. I don't know. But, yeah, we're doing this out of our houses, and we're doing the best we can, and we'll continue to do the best we can as long as we can handle it. Hopefully it'll grow in the future, and we can get distributors, and that will solve so many problems. We'll be able to do subscriptions in the future. We'll be able to, if the magazine grows and takes off, but it has to happen first.
Right.
It has to go. Anyway, yeah, that out of the way, you were going to talk about your new power book.
Yes, if anybody remembers the last time I was on, Ep 10,
Has it been that long? Episode 10?
Yeah.
Man, we got to get you on more often. Real life really did
when
kick you.
When flies.
Yeah, well, you really did. Life kicked you in the nads hard, didn't it?
Oh, ways you don't even want to know. But anyway, last time we talked, I've got a couple G4s, desktop machines, I've got an iMac, but I did have an iBook. One of the white 900 megahertz ones. It was a great machine, but it just didn't have the guts to do what I really wanted. I want to get into doing more video, and it's great for doing, you know, some basic work, but for really crunching video and the kind of graphic stuff I want to do, it just really wasn't cutting it. So I bit the bullet, sold the iBook, and I picked up my brand new 15-inch PowerBook on Tuesday, and man, is it sweet. It's unbelievable. I've never touched such a nice piece of hardware in my life. And I think it was Hack and Flash on the forum. I was just reading it yesterday or today. Said there was a post, somebody had a new box, and he said something like, you know, there's nothing like that fresh smell of ripping the plastic out of a box, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like that new car smell, isn't it?
New car smell? Oh, man. Opening the box up and this thing, seeing that nice aluminum case in there.
Yeah.
It's just... And it's got everything. I got the...
All right, now, what? Yeah, give us the specs.
I got the basic model. There's three different models they have. Actually, there's three different levels of the 15-inch. I mean, Apple makes a 12-inch PowerBook 15-inch and a 17-inch.
And you again got the...
I got the what I call, it's like the three little bears. This one was just right. 12 inches too small, the 17-inch was too big, size-wise and budget-wise. This one is perfect for me. It's 15 inches. It's a 1 gigahertz G4 processor. It came with 256 megs of RAM, but I put another 512 into it.
Now, wait a minute. I'm confused. You went from a 900 to a 1 gigahertz. That doesn't seem like a huge jump.
Not a big jump, but you got to bear in mind the iBook was a G3 processor.
Uh-huh.
4, which it's almost like, you know, in the Wintel world, it's probably the same difference of going from a Pentium 3 to a Pentium 4.
Gotcha.
In my gap. I mean, I've never used them, but just to kind of compare apples and oranges, use that analogy. It's a leap in different chip technology, basically. It's got a lot faster bus. I think it has like a 133. I don't even have the specs. It's got a faster bus speed than the iBook did. It's got faster RAM. It's got that PC 2700 RAM, I think it is.
And you said you just upgraded to how much RAM?
Well, I've got 756 in it now. It came with 256. I put a 512 chip in it, but I'm probably even going to put another 512 in it. You can max them out at 2 gigs, but that's more money than I want to spend. Right now what we got here? 768, my math is not good. 768 in there right now, and it just zings right along. It's great. Built-in Bluetooth. I bought the airport card, what they call Airport Extreme, which is 802.11g card.
Right.
2 minutes to pop that in, fired it up, it picked up my network. I didn't have to do anything but type in my password.
Now, and this is a separate card. This is not a built-in.
It didn't come built-in, but the next model up has it built-in.
Oh, I see. See, I don't know that I would like it built-in.
That's one of the reasons. We talked about this before. I don't think I'd want a built-in card either.
Right.
For various reasons. The next model up had the what they call the super drive, the DVD-R, or W. I don't really need that. I've got two G4s with DVD burners in them. I don't need it in the laptop, so I just stuck with the basic CD-ROM, CD-RW drive.
Right, yeah, it's a good place to cut corners if you've already got it on.
And save $600.
Oh, yeah.
Be going to other things.
Absolutely.
It's got the built-in Bluetooth, which... At some point, I would love to get a Bluetooth phone, which would be great. A 60-gig hard drive, and just, it's beautiful. The keyboard is the best laptop keyboard I've ever worked with. It's a slot loading. The optical drive is slot loading, so there's no tray or anything to worry about breaking off. It's loaded to the gills with ports. It's got the two USB 2.0 ports, a FireWire 400 and a FireWire 800. But the 800 is a newer, faster variant of FireWire that they've come out with in the past 6 months or so. I haven't even used anything on FireWire 800, so I can't even compare the transfer speeds. But I know that they make external FireWire drives, FireWire 800, so
right.
Love to play with one of those sometime. It's got S-Video out, the DVI out port, Gigabit Ethernet. I'm just looking here. Ports all over the place on this thing. It's got a nice PCI slot.
Video.
I've never actually had to use a PCI card on any of my laptops because everything's been built in.
Right.
But it's nice to have that option.
Right.
You know,
well, that's kind of the point of the laptop to me, is to have it all self-contained. I don't like the idea of upgrading a laptop myself, so...
And it came with... It's got a Radeon, ATI Radeon 9600 mobility for a graphics card. I've been playing Halo on this thing.
Oh, I'm sorry, it was a 9800?
9600.
9600.
Yeah,
that's still
I've been
a nice
playing
card.
Halo on this thing, and it rocks.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have everything set high. I got pretty much the median average for the graphics settings, and it doesn't miss a beat.
Awesome. Does it have a video output so that you could put it to a bigger monitor or
something? Yeah, it's got S-Video. It's got the DVI.
Right, the DVI out, good.
DVI out, it came with the adapters, so I could hook it. It's got a DVI to...
VGA?
VGA adapter. It's got an S-Video to an RCA adapter, so if I was on the road somewhere and had to hook it up to a TV set to play a DVD, I could do that.
Very cool.
Not that I'd ever really need to, but...
But it's there if you want it.
It's there if I want it.
Exactly.
And it came with some pretty decent software. It came with OS 10, 10.3, obviously. And it's just, it's a nice machine. And I've really been putting it through the tests as far as, like, video and graphics and stuff. Hasn't missed a beat. It's great. Only thing I haven't been able to do with it so far is go war driving.
Oh, man.
I wanted to do that today, and it just didn't. I updated all my my wireless sniffing programs. I've got Kizmac, iStumbler, and Mac Stumbler all in here, just raring to go, and I haven't had a chance to get out of the house with it to do anything. But maybe next time I'll have a report on that.
Well, you know, that's your, as a matter of fact, since you mentioned report, that might be article material there. You might have to write that up.
Yeah, for, not for this issue, but...
2.2.
Yeah, definitely.
So 2.2. And you say this came with Panther, right, which is OS X 10.3?
The last time we talked, 10.2, whatever revision that was, probably 10.2.8 was the most current version of OS 10. I think it was back in September, October, they released 10.3, which they termed Panther. For some reason, Apple seems to have code names attached to everything. They've had for years, all their products have had these code names attached to them. Hmm. And that's pretty common, though,
yeah.
In the computer industry. But with Jaguar, they actually made the code name part of the branding, part of the product name.
All right, you saw the displays with the fur and stuff like
exactly.
that.
Exactly, but now it's just, you know, black and silver is what they're using for the Panther boxes.
Now, is there that much of a leap between Jaguar and Panther?
There is. And I was kind of going over some of the things that that are improved. Now, I'll tell you the speed of the OS itself, just the responsiveness on the different machines I've used 10.3 on, is just unbelievable.
Really?
Well, 10.2 was okay. I've got an older iMac that's only a 400 megahertz G3. It's not top. It's about 3-4 years old. With Jaguar, it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely, you know, I think I had about 512 megs of RAM in it. The responsiveness was okay. It was just simple things like opening windows, changing menus, loading applications. It seemed a little sluggish sometimes.
Uh-huh.
I put Panther on it. Man, it's snappy. I don't know.
So even with an old 400
on an older machine, this
is that the old IMAX with the flavors, the colors.
This is actually one of the orange, the tangerine ones.
Okay.
Panther on this thing it loads faster, it boots faster, just responsiveness is just a lot better than it was in Jaguar. So that was a big thing for me.
Could you possibly still play a game on such an old system? Could you play Halo on that old system running
probably
Jaguar?
Probably not. A lot of the game, that's another reason I went with the PowerBook with the G4, is because a lot of the software, especially games that they're coming out with, require at least an 800 megahertz G4. I think that's the requirement for Halo.
Do you know what the requirements for Panther are, the minimum requirements just in general?
You can run them on a G3. I think they want at least a 400 or 350 or 400 megahertz G3. They say in the box, I'm pretty sure they say 256 megs of RAM, but you at least want 512.
Right.
Honestly, just like anything else, the more memory you have, the better.
Of course, right.
The PowerBook came with 256, and it ran, but if I had, you know, four or five things open at once, I could definitely tell just switching to menus and switching applications. You get that lag when it switches to virtual memory. You can hear the hard drive crank a little bit more.
Right.
Depends on the game. Brand new games you couldn't use that on a
right now. Right, just trying to gauge generally. It's not quite powerful enough to be a good gaming machine, but... And therefore, it's probably not nearly enough to be video editing if your 900 wasn't even quite...
No, and that had a great video card. And that could play some games okay.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, when you get into video, you really need something, you know... Well, one of my G4s is a dual processor, and that thing just zips right along. I mean, I can do anything on that thing. I can render video, surf the web, get my email, burn a DVD, all at the same time.
And OS X has support for dual processor.
Dual processor, the multitasking, and it doesn't miss a beat. I can do all those things simultaneously, and I'll tell you, for somebody in my profession, that's a good thing. You can do so many things at once and saves time.
Wow, I didn't realize a computer was that important to a gigolo.
Well, you know, you got to keep the appointments and straight.
Oh,
you
gotta
make sure
your
clients are paying you when they're.
Oh, you meant your other profession? Oh, well,
yeah.
Did I make a mistake and mention on the air?
Well, you know, I'm gonna go public with the stock any time now.
Well, I'm first in line. Put me in for a couple shares.
So I mean, the responsiveness was better, and they've added some features which I think are pretty cool. One of the things that they've got in 10.3 is something what they call expose, which how many times have you had been on your desktop and you have, say, 10 windows open? And I know on Linux there's, like, the taskbar. I know in KDE it's got the different boxes for each one.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have that open, I mean, sometimes you don't want the taskbar on the bottom just because it eats up real estate or whatever, for whatever reason.
Right.
It could even be in an application. They've got this thing called expose. You basically push one of your function keys, and every window you have open on the computer shrinks down onto the screen. So all your windows are viewable on your screen.
Hmm.
Then you just hold the mouse over the one you want to get to, and you click it, and bam, it opens it up.
Oh.
And then you see your desktop. You hit another button, all the windows kind of shrink down, and you can see the desktop. It's really cool. Fast user switching. Which
I guess without seeing it, I'm not sure. It sounds kind of like a window maker, or...
I'm not really that familiar with Linux and how that all works, but you have to see it.
I'm going to make a special trip this week to the Mac. There's a Mac store in the mall near where I work. I'm going to go take a trip there and check it out.
It's very cool. I mean, I've actually used it because my desktop, my desktop area gets, I have windows open all the time. And you can always, in the top there's a window option in the top menu bar. You can pull it down. It tells you what ones you have open. You can select one of them. But this is just a nice, quick way to switch windows. You can, in Photoshop, for example, I can have six different files open in Photoshop. I'm cutting and pasting and working on different things. You can hit another key in an application. It'll shrink down all the windows for that application.
Hmm.
If you're working on two different files and like, oh, I don't, you know, I need to see, and it's a nice visual reference. You have a track of what you've got open. It's just really cool to work with. It saved me keystrokes and mousing around, and it's very cool.
Hmm. Sounds cool.
I know there's fast user switching, which I know has been around in Windows XP for a while. That's something that's new in 10.3. You can have multiple users logged in simultaneously, and all you do is whoever is currently logged in, their name shows up in the menu bar, and if you want another person wants to log in, they just select their name from the list, and you just type in your password. Then it's like a 3D cube. The screen turns.
Ah.
The other user account shows up. That's pretty cool. I mean, that's another thing that, for a single user like me, it's not really a big deal. But if you have a family, you're sharing the machine with somebody, your girlfriend, your wife or whatever, it's kind of nice that you don't have to log out. They can do what they want, and then you have to log back in. It's
right.
Just another time saver.
Right.
But for the geeks in us, some of the other cool stuff is, and I don't know if there's an equivalent in Windows or not, but it has the built-in ability to make a zip archive of any folder right from the desktop.
Right, yeah, that's been in XP for a while.
All right, see, I had a feeling it would be, but that's something new, which has been, previously they have to use a third-party program you've heard of Stuff at Expander.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
SIT.
They have Drop Stuff and Drop Zip, which previously you'd have to use to make a compressed archive of a folder or something, but now you do it right from the desktop. It's very cool. It's got some built-in file encryption. There's a feature called File Vault. And if you activate that, it will use with AES-128 encryption on your user folder.
Hmm.
I haven't played around with it because I don't really have anything on here that I really need encrypted. But
right.
It'd be something that if you whatever data you had, you didn't want anybody to see.
Right, particularly on a laptop.
Laptop, exactly. I mean, if you had financial records or anything,
Yeah, you don't want to risk it being stolen or losing it or leaving
exactly.
It somewhere.
And there's a certain password that you have to put in order to access that information, which is kind of cool. Built-in faxing, which I haven't used yet, but it's another neat feature somebody might be interested in. what I thought was cool is when I actually did a reinstall on this because I partitioned the drive on it. But it, 10.3 gives you the option of installing the GIMP print drivers, the open source print drivers.
Right.
The reason that's cool is because if there's, let's say you have a printer that, for whatever reason, the printer manufacturer doesn't have an OS X driver for it, there's a good chance with the GIMP print drivers you could actually use that printer. And that wasn't in Jaguar. That's something that's new.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it's on the development side, for programmers and whatnot, they've included, there's a developer's tool disk that comes with Panther. If you buy it, it comes with it. If you get a computer, it's already installed, and there's a restore disk that has it. But there's a disk with all these developer tools, and one of the things they've done is they've included Linux APIs for programmers. So if you're a software developer, you can not only develop the software to run on Mac under with the Unix and everything, but you can also port it to Linux a lot easier.
Right. Well, it makes natural sense.
Right. Right. And I think that's good because I've read a couple of on the rumor boards. Anybody familiar with Macs knows that the rumors run rampant, and everybody's already speculating what 10.4 is going to have. And I've seen it in a few different places that have been pretty right on with some of the stuff. And I don't know the specifics of it, but apparently there's going to be some higher level of Linux involvement in the next version of OS X. And I don't know what that is. There's even been some speculation that Apple's going to port some of their applications over to Linux.
I think that would be a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, like iTunes, iPhoto, and maybe even some of the higher-end apps. Because
iTunes is ported over to at least Windows, isn't it? I think I remember reading that somewhere.
Something new that since the last time we talked as well.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's real new. I think that was part of this whole Pepsi Super Bowl commercial. I think
it was right before the holidays, I think it was.
Oh, has it been that long?
Yeah. And actually, it was kind of funny because the day they announced iTunes for Windows, if you went to Apple's site, the headline on it was "Hell has frozen over" or something like that.
That's good.
If you get a chance to play with 10.4, anybody that's used Jaguar before, you're going to notice a lot of great things about Panther, about 10.3. The one thing that I do not like about it, though, and this is something I'm hoping they'll fix, is the way that you browse a network. Previously, in Jaguar, there was from the desktop, you could do, under the file, there was a go, and there was a connect to server command. And what that would do is bring up a window that basically would scan your network and show up any machine that had file sharing enabled or,
Right.
But whether it be Windows or Mac, it would show up.
Okay.
But now there's still that connect to server command, but you need to know the IP address of the machine you want to connect to, which kind of defeats the purpose in my view. If you go to your friend's house and you want to network with his machine, you don't know the IP address offhand. Before, you could just open that window and it would scan the network and bam, it would show up. You connect, no problem.
Right, but maybe, again, not knowing much about it, that's where you're war driving. You don't want it to be that easily accessible if you're
right, which may be the reason they changed it.
Right.
But what they've done, they've actually integrated the network connection option into the desktop window. So if you open a window, let's say just crack over my desktop icon here, you get a window with all your files. But off to the left of it, you more or less get a list of shortcuts or favorites that you can drag and drop folders and files and entire drives in there.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one called Network. And if you select Network, then it will open up another side pane. It's really hard to describe if you haven't seen it. But basically, in your main part of the window, it shows any servers or network machines that it finds. And then you would just select it and put your password in. The thing I don't like about it is that you really don't know whether you're connected to it or not, because previously it would mount on your desktop, and a little icon would be there just like it was a hard drive connected to your computer.
And now it does not?
No, it doesn't.
Hmm.
And, unless you really know where to look, you really don't know if you're connected or not. So, I don't really care for that. It's not a problem for somebody that knows it, but, your average user isn't going to know where to look.
Right, it could be annoying.
Connected or not, so.
Hmm. Well, I can see where that could be a little bit annoying, yeah.
And it just there's a lot of stability improvements that I've noticed. Every program that ships with Panther has been upgraded. One of the cool things that they've done is, I think we talked last time about the X11 Windows environment, so you can use a lot of the open source Unix and Linux apps.
Right.
On your Mac. They've actually bundled that as part of the OS. It's installed right along with it. I mean, you have the option of installing it if you want it or not. Of course, I chose to install it. And the X11 program, it's really a program, and that the X11 Windows environment runs within that. And they made it a little bit easier to make that integration between your OS X desktop and any of the X11 apps that you want to use. So I actually, over the weekend, installed KDE on it, and I've been playing with that. And that was kind of fun, because there was a couple little glitches that I discovered along the way, and I had to do some research on the web to figure out what was going on, but once I figured it out, it worked like a charm.
So I'm a little confused. Are you saying that to run an X11 environment, you actually have to... So you don't have a choice of whether you can boot into the Mac shell or the Mac environment, the Windows environment, I should say, the windowing system, or KDE under X11 or something. You actually have to boot into your Mac window environment first and then start X11
exactly.
Separately.
Sure, so your computer's going to boot up into OS X.
So it's a window within a window.
More or less, but you have the option of running it in what they call full window mode.
Right, but it is technically still a window within
more
a window.
More or less, yeah. But what it really is, it's just tapping into that, into the BSD, the Unix core of it, and just allowing you to use, like, GIMP,
right,
Nmap, any of those.
And you couldn't use that directly from the Mac?
No, not unless... See, there's enough...
Because those X11 libraries are probably required.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And that's the other thing, too, is if you're going to do that, you have to install... this developer tool set, because it installs a compiler, and a lot of the stuff that you find, it's there's only a source for it, so you have to have a compiler in order to get it to work.
Right.
So I actually downloaded the source for KDE. I mean, it was a full everything. KDE was like one package, and it took about 15 hours for it to compile.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, all right, is this thing going to be done anytime soon? But, you know, I was reading around, and this is just, I guess, the speed of the machine. Some guy, I don't even know what I think it was like an older G4 PowerBook. I think it took like 3 days for his to compile or something like
that. Wow.
So I thought 15 hours was pretty good. But,
now, can you, when you do that, a window within a window, do you have access to your original... You said you can run it in full screen mode. I understand that. Can you cut and paste and move objects back and forth
Absolutely.
Between them?
Actually, if you go, when KDE launches, what I did is I went into the control panels there and just turned off. So basically, there's an option to not show desktop icons, because by default, it showed up. There's a KDE desktop. All the KDE icons were there.
Right.
I went and turned that off so that I actually have access to my OS X desktop right from KDE.
Hmm.
It's very, very cool. I mean, I haven't had a chance to really play with a lot of the applications and stuff, but it just opens up a whole other world.
Right. Well, it sounds a lot like the virtual PC. It sounds like an emulation type integrated
Well, it's not really emulating. It actually is.
Right.
Like, I mean, you're running Unix applications.
Yeah, not exactly, but it's. I mean, it kind of is. It's almost like it's built in, or even almost like remote desktop. To yourself, almost, in a weird kind of way.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you are actually running the Unix apps.
Right.
So there's really not any emulation. It's really, again, without showing you.
Right, and all the fact that you can drag things back and forth makes it a little different as well, so...
But funny that you brought a virtual PC, because that was another thing I wanted to mention. We talked a little bit about that the last time.
Right.
I actually finally got a hold of...
That's what I called the killer app.
Yeah. I mean, I've had virtual PC, but up until recently, all I had was Windows 98. I finally got my chance to get the Windows XP, what they call the OS pack. It's basically a disk that you would buy, and it has pre-bundled on there a disk image of a Windows XP installation. All you do is drag it on your hard drive, and when you go to a virtual PC, tell it basically to install a virtual OS. Finally got a chance to play with the Windows XP. What were they thinking? I don't know. What is with that interface?
Yeah, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
There's been, since XP came out, there's been more development in Windows shells and alternative windowing systems than I've ever seen before, since Windows 3.1. They've ported Fluxbox, I forget what it's called, I think they renamed it, there's a couple different ones. There's a Fluxbox port for XP, there's a few different shells available and hacks to the existing shell. I don't know what the next, I think they're going to make a jump again with, I guess it's still called Longhorn, I don't know, I haven't heard much from it in a while, it's been on the down low, but I think they're going to make some more changes with that, so it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that, see if they fix some of the annoyances with XP with that.
Right. Well, it's just nice that I finally have, because I don't have access to a PC that runs XP. It's just nice to be able to finally have access to it so I can at least poke around and learn a little bit more about it so I can hear what all you guys are complaining about.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, I bash anything that's bad or problems or annoyances or something like that, but I don't bash XP and Microsoft just for the sake of it. You know, if I do, it's because there's something particular that I want
to,
that I don't like, you know.
Bashed.
But there's not necessarily innately anything wrong with XP per se. I mean, it has issues, but frankly, so does everything else.
Everything does.
You'd be naive to say otherwise. I know a lot of people swear they'll never use it, and
I
might swear that like one night when I'm frustrated with it and about to put my fist through the monitor, but in the grand scheme of things, it's
just on that matter, one of the things I will say, I mean, as much as I love OS X, there's a few things about it that really annoy me, and I don't know if you have any such things as permissions in Windows, but one of the things about OS X that really annoys me is that since everything is Unix-based, everything has a file permission.
Right, and that's what I was going to say. That, I mean, they had to have adopted that when they went
with
the whole...
Yeah, it's really not anything you can just strip out of the OS.
Right.
If you're going to base something on Unix, it's going to be there. But it just seems like in OS X, every month, I have to go, there's what they call the repair permissions utility. And if anybody's using OS X and it's like you get gobs of RAM, but things are taking a lot longer to open up, you're seeing that little beach ball a lot more often than you would normally, go into your utilities folder and run disk utility, and there's an option there for repair permissions. And what that does is, if a lot of times when you install software, at least third-party software installers will change the read-write permissions on certain files, but they won't change them back. And what happens over time is these permissions get changed. Things tend to take longer to open up because it's almost like the computer has to figure out, all right, can I open this file? I can't open this file. And I've noticed that every month or so I have made it a routine to go and run this utility, and it takes care of a lot of problems. I actually had a couple printing problems last month. I wouldn't print to one of my printers. I ran the repair permissions, and it could print with no problems. So there's a little bit of a quirkiness there, and I hope that they can get that solved because, again, for the typical home user, they don't want to have to do that, and they shouldn't have to do that.
Well, and can you make a shell script or a batch script of some sort and schedule run monthly?
You can do that, and again, that's the kind of thing that a home user shouldn't, you know, Joe Schmo shouldn't have
right, to do. Right, right, but...
Budweiser shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah.
There's third-party, you know, there's a little freeware applications that will do that, but...
Is there a scheduler built into...
That's another thing that an Apple really needs to get on the ball with some of this maintenance stuff, because they haven't really addressed a lot of these little Unix hangover type things. As far as, you know, Betty and Bob Budweiser on their eMac, who don't know what repair permissions are. There's nothing built into the OS that will let them resolve that unless they take it, you know, unless they call someone and ask them or go on a website and find that out. There's nothing built into the OS that will let them schedule it or anything like that, and there really needs to be.
Right. Well, I want to actually pick up an old iMac somewhere. I want to get one fairly cheap, obviously. I want to pick up an old used one from somewhere. I'm going to watch the papers on eBay or something like that. I'd like to pick up one of those old iMacs maybe for a couple hundred bucks and put 10.3 on there and just to familiarize myself and play with it a little bit and get used to it being a non-Mac guy and just learn basics on a system like that.
You can find, I would say at least get a 500 or 600 megahertz one. That will look, because if you wanted to get into doing any of the X11 stuff, like the compiler and stuff, definitely get something with a little bit more speed. Pay a little bit more, but you can get a decent one for about $400 or $500.
Yeah, see, I could get a top-end PC for that price, though. I mean, honestly. I can go get an Athlon 64, even. Even get a 64-bit processor almost for that price with a bare-bones system right there that will just scream, as opposed to spending that much for a Mac that's, you know, a couple of years old and it's not even, you know, a G3.
Well, what would be a G3?
Well, that's what I mean. It's not even up to date. It would be a G3.
I
don't know. The prices on them just aren't quite. And again, that's what happens. That's just the nature of Apple and the way they do things. You can only buy a Mac from Apple, you know, as opposed to PCs that you can build yourself and have different distributors, different companies that build them. There's only one Apple. So it's kind of not a price. There's not price competition.
I don't see that as a problem because if the OS and the hardware are designed by the same company, I know that they're going to work together.
Yeah, I mean, there's a positive to it, but there is a negative to it. That is the price control.
I totally agree. If I could, you know, buy a PowerBook, you know, a comparable machine for somebody for, you know, $800 less, so yeah, I might do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, well, I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna look, keep my eyes open. What is the fastest of those? I see. And the other thing I like, and I know it's all cutesy and girly and everything with those flavored iMacs and stuff, but I like the fact that it was one unit with a handle on it and you could carry it around in a nice self-contained thing. What is the fastest iMac that they make? What is the fastest one of those all-in-one?
Didn't they top out
at 400?
600.
Oh, they did. So I could get a 600 and still be.
Oh yeah, I mean you could pick one of those up at 600. I'm pretty sure 600 were the top ones, and then they went to what I call the eye lamp ones with the flat screen.
Well, I'll see what I can find out there at the best price for the power.
Yeah, if I can find something, just send me the specs on it, what they want for it, and you know I give you an idea whether it's a good buy or not.
Yeah, and I'll keep my eye open locally still in the newspaper and stuff like that. You can still usually find good deals like that. Don't forget, people, there are, even though we got the internet and everything in front of us and eBay, still have print, you still have newspapers, you still have local people trying to sell their stuff and get rid of it, garage sales. I don't know if you have a Haitian swap shop near you, but you probably got some kind of swap shop, some kind of
French-Canadian swap shop.
Yeah, exactly.
Up here in the Great White North.
So don't rule out locally. Because that's the other thing. You're going to have to pay for shipping for that thing. That could be a pain.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've seen a lot of the prices on eBay for things. The shipping is almost worth almost as much as what you would buy it for.
Exactly, yeah. Yep. And that, you know, what little bit you would save by buying it used on eBay, shipping makes it right back up, so you don't really get any, you lose the advantage.
I mean, if you have like a used computer store around you, because that's where I got my old iMac from. I a place that basically sells all PCs, and once in a great while they'll get a Mac there, but they never last because as soon as they come in they get scooped up. But I bought that iMac for, I think it was like $400. I paid for it. $1 per megahertz.
Now, we know that, like you said, you know that you can run some Linux apps, some Unix apps on it.
You can actually run Linux on them, too. That was the other thing.
Right.
That you might find interesting. You could set it up as a dual boot. Actually, you could set it up as a triple boot. You could have OS 9, OS 10, and a Linux distro on there.
Well, what kind of open source software movement exists for the native Mac OS X. Is there such a thing as open source software developed strictly primarily for the Mac?
There's a ton of people that are developing software for it. A lot of it's free. And I won't say it's all covered by the GNU public license, but there's tons and tons of free little utilities, applications. One of the things I've really been using is I've been using OpenOffice a lot.
Right, OpenOffice.org.
There's right. There's an OS X native version of that, and it works great.
Oh, there's an OS X native?
Yes.
Oh, that's very interesting. I did not know that.
Well, I take that back. It's for the OS X 11 environment. If you install the X11,
right. Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Then there's just a little script that basically you don't have to type in you don't have to type a command line. I mean, it's just a little icon. You click it, and it launches X11, and then that launches OpenOffice.org, and bam.
I got you.
And I've been using that, and it works great. I'm totally 100% Microsoft free on this thing, except I still have Explorer on here just to test websites with.
Right, well. Oh, and you know what? Since you brought that up, I don't know. Gosh, I don't mean to put you on the spot. Somebody mentioned in the forums one time they were questioning if there was a good tool or a good way to test your code, your web code, across multiple browsers without having to install all those separate browsers on the system. Have you run into, because I know you do some of that kind of stuff, is there one tool that will kind of parse through using rules for each of the different browsers or kind of test it? I mean, obviously, if it's W3C compliant HTML 4.0 or 3.0 or whatever, it should render pretty close to the same in everything. But there's always those minor differences. Is there some kind of developer's tool, some kind of application and thing that you can test?
I would think there would have to be, but I just don't know of it, just because I have all the browsers installed, and if I need to look at something in Windows, I use a virtual PC.
And that's basically what you do, is you bring it up in each browser to see how it looks.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Because that's more or less what I do for a living, and I have a lot more control that way. But, you know, I almost think that somebody on the forums posted a link to something that would do that. I think actually it was Pixelfiend might have posted a link to, there was a website that had some sort of utility that would do that. It would check the code, but I don't remember for sure. There's got to be something.
Yeah, it seems like there was. I thought maybe you had had some experience with it, but
I'm one
of
the guys that installs all the browsers.
And I was going to say, I do the same thing. I install them all just because I want to play with it and like it and see which ones, the differences
exactly.
And stuff, so... That's just kind of a personal preference, I guess.
But I could see, you know, you want to test it on different operating systems as well.
Right.
What looks good in one OS might look completely different in another OS.
Right. Well, yeah, that's true, too. That's true, too.
It all depends on how the page is coded and what sort of technology is used under the hood and all that good stuff.
Right. Well, is there anything else about Panther you wanted to bring up, or...?
Just kind of... cap it off by saying I like it. I mean, it's okay. Fast. It's I have yet to have any crashes with it. I've been using.
Oh, come on now.
I've had applications crash, but the OS itself has been great. I have had yet to restart my machines, any of them. Other than there's times you'll install something and it'll say you have to restart the machine, but. I have yet to have a crash on any of my machines.
I don't even know what a Macintosh crash looks like, to be honest.
Actually, in OS X, if you get a kernel pan, you can get a nice, polite little multilingual box.
Multilingual.
Let's restart your computer in about 7 different languages. It's the most polite kernel panic you're ever going to see.
Uh-huh. But you've never seen it before.
I saw it under Jaguar.
Oh, okay.
I saw it under
not yet under Panther.
Twice. And one was because I did something with I think I unplugged a USB hub or something, and it didn't like that, and it crashed. And the other time was actually using a Microsoft program.
Blame Microsoft.
Yeah, I was doing something in Entourage and didn't like it. That was it.
Yeah,
I've only had 2 system crashes.
Yeah, the USB thing happens a lot with the Windows also. That's kind of a weird... I guess it's just the fact that the power running through it I don't know why that seems to be such a big cost, but anyway.
At least it's universal.
Yeah, sounds like it. Sounds like it. So do you think putting on Panther? Okay, let me rephrase it. If you had not gotten the new laptop, which I assume came with Panther,
yes,
would you have upgraded your 10.2?
Oh, definitely.
You still would have updated to it anyway? You think it's worth the difference? And how much? What is it? $100 or more?
It's like $129. I mean, if you don't have anything with OS 10, you're gonna go out and buy Panther because they don't sell 10.2 anymore.
Well, right. But if you have 10.2, is it worth $129 to upgrade to 10.3?
I would say it depends on what you're doing using the computer for. If it's someone that's just using a computer to get online, do email, surf the web, maybe do some word processing, I don't think you're going to see that much of a difference. I don't know if it's really worth it. It's personally, I think it is worth it. There's a lot of the features that have saved me time, and just the speed of the OS on my older machines has been just a godsend. Because I have an older, slower G4 that I use to do bookkeeping and actually have a little MP3 server running here at the house. And it works so much better under Panther than it ever did under Jaguar. So if you have an older machine, it's definitely worth it because it seems like it's 10.3 works a lot snappier on the older machines. I don't know exactly how they did that, but it's definitely noticeable.
All right. Well, code optimization, you have to assume it's going to do, they're going to enhance it a little bit, perfect it a little bit. All right. Well, so there you go. Go out, buy a Mac.
Oh, the other thing, too, I want for anybody that really interested, one of the neat new things that they didn't have in Jaguar that they have in Panther is it comes with a postfix mail server. It's not turned on by default, but if you know, you can go into the command line and actually, you know, there's a config file, you can actually turn it on. So you can actually run a mail server if you wanted to.
Now, truthfully, don't people that are using Macs, they're using them more as desktops and application and stuff like that. Very few people that I've heard of use Macs as a server.
There's a lot more than you think.
Hmm.
I was doing so because I saw one of the show notes that you sent me. I don't know if you've heard about the G5 cluster that Virginia Tech had.
Hmm.
That they had built. They had built they took 1,100 G5. They called it a Terascale cluster, and apparently there's this website, top500.org, and they basically catalog all the supercomputers in the world.
Mm-hmm.
This cluster was supposedly third on their list of the fastest supercomputers.
Really?
Yeah. And there's actually a website. If you go to computing.vt.edu, it's got pictures and it explains how they set the whole thing up. They're using it for some high-end computing stuff, but there's actually a lot. I mean, maybe not so much in the past, but I think now you're finding a lot more people are switching over to Macs with OS X for servers just because of the Unix base.
Right. Well, that changes a lot.
That changes a lot. Plus the hardware, they came out with the Xserve, which is a rack-mounted server, which they never had before.
Right.
Previously, it was just, you know, a reconfigured G4, but now they actually have these rack mount servers, and I've never done anything with one of them, but I hear they're really nice.
Pricey, I'll bet, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I don't know. It depends, because it's different configurations. They're probably, you know, $2,500, maybe. Ouch. I don't know what a full-blown Wintel server would cost, but...
Right. Well, of course, it would depend on configurations as well. But
exactly. But there's a lot more people switching. You know, from what I've read and everything, all the research I've done, a lot of people are adapting. You know, using these OS X based servers just because of the Unix capabilities.
Interesting. Very interesting.
But you know, I think Windows probably has like built-in web hosting. I'm not sure.
Web server?
Yeah, well, web server. OS X got Apache as part of it.
Hmm.
Comes with Apache. Basically, you click a button, and you can host your website on your computer if you really wanted to.
Right, and but then it comes into a whole lot of other things come into play, like your IP address, dynamics, you know, broadband,
blah, blah, blah. Ways you can get around,
that's universal.
IP forwarding thing from, was it IP.org is one that I've used.
There's several, yeah. There's several.
But that's the other thing, too, speaking of servers, if anybody gets a chance to play with OS X server, because there's actually a server version of OS X, which we didn't get to talk about much last time, but that's got some really cool stuff in it, too. It's got, you know, mail, print, web servers, and I've used that for a couple different things. And actually, when I had my site hosted here at home, I was running that on my old G4 running OS X server.
Hmm.
That thing never crashed.
And does if you hook in just a generic G3, G4, just a normal desktop system, will it interface cleanly and easily with your Windows boxes and or Linux boxes? Could you add one to your network as another node and it see and communicate with the other boxes easily?
I haven't done it with a Linux box, but I've done it with Windows. And it's... I've heard people that have problems getting them to talk to each other, but it's... Every time I've done it, it's worked seamlessly. OS X has SMB file sharing as part of it.
Okay.
There's basically a little button you click, Windows file sharing, you click it, and bam, you can share with Windows machines.
And Windows machines can share with it.
And, yeah.
Vice versa, right.
Yeah, exactly. And I've actually, you know, been able to go the other way, too, that when you go to file share on the Mac, the Windows machine shows up.
Good deal.
The only problem I've come across is that the file naming, because I think SMB, it adheres to the DOS naming protocol.
Right.
I'm not really sure, but there's something I read on Apple's site that you can't have, you know, things like backslashes or pound signs, or there's certain characters you can't have in the file name, because if you try and transfer the file to the PC, you'll get an error message.
You'll get an error? Well, it's not smart enough to interpret it to a more readable character before it writes. It just changes it.
Because I think in OS X, I think you can have like 31 characters for a file name or something like that.
That's a limitation in
even
OS X?
Even longer than that, but whatever you know, the naming limitations in X are, they don't translate to SMB. So if you're going to send a file over to a Windows machine via SMB, you'd have to make sure that it adhered to that.
I see.
But you couldn't have, like, you know, some of the funky characters, like ampersands, I think, were one of them. So you just have to change the name of the file. That's the only problem I've come across with that.
Yeah, well, I guess that's fairly minor.
But to answer your question, yes, they've come a long way making the cross-platform networking as pretty much painless as it can be, I think.
Yeah, I really would be interested in seeing, I mean, I'm sure you know this as well as I, this is no secret, but Mac users have a stereotype of being zealots. I'm sure you're aware of that.
It's the God's honest truth.
Yeah, so, you know, I know that you are a lot more open-minded, and you point out some of the inadequacies here and some of the similarities to Linux and et cetera, but it's tough to find unbiased information out there that will sit down and literally compare, okay, performance on a Mac G4 with these specs versus an equivalent here, and you know, have some shootouts and some details on what's, you know, and how much each one costs.
Yeah, you think something
bang
would be
for
technically
the
oriented, you could find some unbiased and just pure data, but it's really hard. It's the
yeah.
same thing as, like, you know, politics.
Exactly.
It's
a good
find
comparison.
A clear unbiased view, because everybody has a bias no matter what.
Right.
But, you know, I tend to ignore all that. I mean, like I said back in App 10, you really want to base your requirements for what it is that you want to do. And if the machine does what you want, then that's the main consideration. I mean, sure, I could have gone out and got a, you know, like a Dell Presario or whatever they're called that probably has a 3 gigahertz processor, but you know what? It's apples and oranges. You know, it's...
Well, there's got to be some way to compare. I mean, a 1 gigahertz G4, that's what you just got, right?
Yep.
I mean, what would be... I mean, it's not going to be the same as a 1 gigahertz P4. G4, P4. It wouldn't be equivalent to a 1 gigahertz Pentium 4.
Because there's so many variables. I mean, the chip architecture, for one thing, is completely different.
Right, so people don't quite understand how to make that parallel.
Honestly, the only way I think that you could come up with some sort of real-world comparison is to go to an office, go to, like, a design firm, and stick, you know, and that's the thing. There's so many variables. I mean, you have... Well, you know how it's like if you have your own computer set up the way you want and you're used to working on it, you could have the same exact hardware if you went someplace else. If it wasn't set up exactly the way that you're used to at home, you're going to be fumbling to find where the certain folders are. You're going to be fumbling to find, you know, where is this application located? You know what I mean?
Right.
So you could have, I mean, somebody actually said to me, well, won't we just take an office and put a Mac in this corner, PC in that corner. Well, what are the people using are going to be used to using one computer, one...
Right, well, you know, you gotta create some similarities and start with some kind of...
I think the only way to really get an honest-to-goodness comparison is to do some of the things that people normally do, like open up Photoshop with the same file. And
well, there's benchmarking.
Some of the tests do that. They'll use a Photoshop file and they'll say, well, how long does it take it to do a Gaussian blur? Or how long does it take it to change color modes or whatever? But then again, you've got so many, there's different variables for the system. I mean, how fast, you know, what is it, a 5200 RPM drive or a 7200 RPM drive? What kind of RAM does it have?
Well, again, you'd have to come up with standards, but you know.
You'd have to come up with standards. And honestly, I don't know how you would do that.
Well, it'd be tough, but at least
there's
got to be something better.
It's got to be able to be done, though.
Yeah, there's got to be something better out there than there is now. Right now, you can't find anything.
No.
I mean, take a...
And I
given
the
last same...
one, when Apple introduced the G5, they said, you know, it's the world's fastest computer. Like, they're going to catch so much hell for that. And they did.
Well.
Because you can't come up with a marketing ploy like that without being able to back it up. And okay, maybe for a day or two it might have been, but... You know, not long after the G5s came out, AMD came out with their 64-bit processors.
Right, well, and, you know, and AMD has kind of further blurred things with the way they've changed their naming. You know, they're not going with gigahertz anymore. They're going by 2200, 2400, 3000, which doesn't equate to 24 and is not equal to 2.4 gigahertz necessarily. It's a, you know, it's, there's got to be a, I would like to see, I guess, personally, I'd like to see something that says, okay, a G4 1 gigahertz Mac system with 512 of RAM and this hard drive is equivalent to approximately this Intel box, just to get an idea. And then look, when you see, okay, these are somewhat in the same class, same range, and then look at the price between the two of them and see what the price difference is and what kind of bang you get for your buck. It may take... And I don't know, I'm making this number out of time. It may take a P4 3 gigahertz machine to equal that one. I don't know if that's the case or not. And that's what I'd like to see. Is it equivalent to a P4? Is it equivalent to a 64-bit processor from AMD? Is it equivalent to, you know...
Yeah, no, I mean, those are the kind of things that would be good. But it gets back to the whole political thing. And who's making the choices? Who's making the... 'Cause, I mean, you can go to Apple's website, and they'll say, well, you know...
Well, of course, that's what I'm saying. You have to have an unbiased judge,
right,
unbiased, you know.
Say, well, you know, it competes this... The Xserve competes against the Intel Xeon. This, like, well...
Right.
Then they have all these little numbers for footnotes for things. They have to qualify everything.
Well...
Like, well, you know...
At least you get close. That's all I want is a ballpark. Yeah. Just give me close.
Honestly, I haven't seen them in a while. It's been a couple of years. But Consumer Reports actually did some really good comparisons between the Apple and Orange type things with the Macs and PCs.
Hmm.
Back when the actually it was longer than, it was when the blue and white G3s came, we were talking about 1999. But one of the last I haven't read Computer Consumer Reports in years, but they actually did a really good job of kind of presenting, okay, this is this kind of computer, and this is what it does, and this is what it, you know, what the PC does. And they kind of came the closest to what you're talking about.
Right.
Now, yeah, if they're still doing that kind of thing, I can't say, but...
Yeah, I'm sure they do, but it's what time of year, what issue do they do it in, et cetera. So. All right, well, that was a nice, long, detailed review. Anybody who is inexperienced or not very experienced on the Mac, such as myself, hope that had some enlightening information there for you, answered some questions I had anyway, so I got something out of this. And actually, that ended up being a pretty full show already. I want to mention a couple little things here before we go out, because actually I want to go into more detail later. One quick thing is I have been playing with a new search engine I found recently. It's called Vivisimo, V-I-V-I-S-I-M-O, Vivisimo.com, and it's a clustering engine. So I don't know if anyone else has heard about that, but go there and check that out. It was developed at Carnegie Mellon University. It's not a search engine in and of itself. Like I said, it's called, quote, clustering engine. It actually takes results from other search engines and, well, to use their words, kind of clusters it together and then kind of develops a list of keywords based on what results it got from all the other engines and what keywords were in each one to kind of give you a precise... It acts kind of like a portal or a smart portal. For example, a portal being Yahoo, where it's not a search so much as categorized subjects and keywords and stuff like that. So it kind of does that, but it does it from a search engine perspective and clusters the results together instead of chaining down through the portal. So go check that out. I've kind of been using it a little bit lately just to see really what other things are associated with, because you'll get some hits when you search for one item that you're like, well, wait a minute.
I just typed in Ben Rev into it, and you wouldn't believe what came up.
I don't think I've even done that. I might have to do that myself.
Entry number one, Binary Revolution Will Be Digitized. There's our website.
Good
along
job.
The side, it's got clustered results. There's 50 that it lists.
Yeah, and you'll see other things that
including
are
something
associated.
In Arabic.
Yeah, I was going to say, things that are associated, I know that one. That one's, they link to us, and I can't read the site to tell why they link to us or what they're saying about us. They could say American Devil site or something, for all I know. I don't know what this says. But yeah, they'll give you not only links, but also other keywords that are associated with your site. So, you know, it might be interesting if you go out there and find that, you know, the name Binary Revolution, you know, hits on the keyword hacker, you know, 50 times, but it also hits on the word, I don't know, warfare revolution or something 20 times, and you kind of might not have known or realized that. So it kind of clusters these things together based on what it thinks are the keywords and the points of your site. So it is best to kind of go and see it and see what it's doing, and it'll kind of sink in and read. They have a fact that kind of explains it and stuff like that, but see it in action, and it's pretty interesting. I've been using it lately, not abandoning Google or anything like that, but it is kind of an interesting thing to check out.
And
it gets results.
Five times.
I'm sorry?
It has you listed five times under StankDog.
So it has my name associated with
Ben Red.
Interesting. So that is what I've been playing with this past week. Go check that out. And it uses Google as well as other search engines, so you should get all the same results or close to the same results that you would get from going to Google directly. So I'm not saying drop Google, but go try this out and see if you like it. So far, this is one of the better, more interesting search engines I've seen in a while, and I like to go check out some of the newer ones to see what they do. So go check that out. And there's one other story I want to mention. Again, this could be a lot more detail, and it's actually two stories in one. I put in my show notes about Disney World, banning the Segway, which I know Mute would love that story. Segway! They're banned the Segway from being used in the theme parks, and they're scared that they're going to get sued. They're scared of the legal implications and stuff like that, and they're banning it because it is technically it's not approved as a medical device. It's not approved by the FDA as a safe medical disability device that they understand and acknowledge, like a wheelchair would be, for example. You know, so they're kind of scared of getting sued, I guess, if somebody gets hurt or run over or something like that. And there's some uproar about that by people who want to be able to go to the park and they don't...
Poor Mickey Mouse to get run over by a Segway.
Well, he's got those big shoes and all, you know.
Couldn't get out of the way in time.
Yeah.
It was an awful accident, officer. Just the Segway came out of nowhere and poor Mickey was caught in the crossfire.
Right, right. And, what if somebody... You go to get on a ride and you come back and your Segway's been jacked. I mean, that would suck. And then they're going to... What, are you going to sue Disney World because somebody stole your Segway in the park? I mean, I kind of see their point about it. I think it's kind of silly, but... Hey, what do I know? What do they call it? The club. Make a club for Segways.
There you go.
So nobody steals your Segway. But more importantly than that, that was just kind of a funny anecdote, but it's been in the news, I guess yesterday or day before that, that Comcast has made a bid to do not a hostile takeover, but a takeover of Disney. Comcast has put in a bid to own, I think, 66% of Disney Corporation. So there could be a huge merger going on, and that is a big, big deal. I mean, this is every bit as big as the AOL Time Warner merger. And we've seen what that done, and we saw what a disaster that became and how AOL was spun back off because it was because they suck. But I won't even go there. This could be even bigger. This could be a huge thing because Disney has an affiliation with ABC, ESPN. All these things fall under that umbrella, and now Comcast, boy, that could be a lot of... That could have a lot of implications, so I don't want to go into too much detail about it now. We really don't have time anyway. But that may be something we talk about in the upcoming episodes because that could be a really, really big deal if it goes through.
That we all need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, that could be nasty. That could be nasty. Especially depending on how the... Well, anyway, we'll have to talk about that on another episode. Because we have to wrap this up. I think we're a little over, not too awful bad. So do you have any shout-outs you want to give out this week?
Well, I want to get everybody at DDP and everybody that supports BinRev, keep listening, keep reading.
Yeah, and, we can't have, from episode 10 to 33, we can't have such a long gap. We got to have you on again sometime soon. So we definitely got to work that out. I'm... just got off the phone, literally, before the show with Rocket over at Interzone, working out some details with them. So I'll give shout-outs to those guys putting together Interzone Convention in April up in Hotlanta. So I'm hopefully going to be up there with Voodoo Hal, checking that out and doing some episodes from up there. We're going to work out the details, but it looks like we're going to do some recording. I don't know if we're going to stream. We originally kind of toyed around the idea of streaming the whole weekend. I don't know if we're going to go through with that because that could be a logistical nightmare. So what we're probably going to do is air or stream from there live maybe each night with a summary and recap, possibly some interviews and stuff like that. So when we get more detail on that, we will let you know. If you have any feedback for us, you know to email us at radio@binrev.com. And our closing music today is from Brad Sucks. That's his name. And you can go to bradsucks.net, I believe it is. Don't go to bradsucks.com. You'll get something completely unexpected. Or any of the other bradsucks.whatever. It's bradsucks.net. Check out some of his music. This one I pulled is called Gangsta Love. He's given me permission. We're going to play some of his, some different tracks of his in upcoming shows because I think the guy's really talented. He's got some good stuff, so... we're going to close with that tonight. And Logan Five, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
For
thanks
being
for
on the show.
Sorry it's been so long.
Yeah, well, we'll have to work you in more often and get you on here to talk. I mean, we really do need a Mac perspective on things, and I know that you're not only a Mac guy, but you do bring that mixed perspective to, you know, put it all together. So we'll definitely have to work that out. And I guess that's it. I think we ought to wrap it up. What do you think?
Sounds good. I have to get back working on this magazine.
Well, please, by all means, let's get on that. We won't want to keep you. So we'll just tell everybody that we will see them all next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.
I was always sad. I told her stop and my ass gets down. I asked her why, here is what she said. she slapped me down and she fucked me up. Is what she said when she got done. About my feelings all night long, but tonight I got a headache 'cause you kicked me in the face.